United States Steel, USS, the industrial family that serves the nation, presents the Theater Guild on the air. Our star, Gene Tierney, our play, The First Year by Frank Craven, produced on the air tonight by the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. In your home, in your business, in your travel. The trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. And now, from Broadway, direct from the stage of the Vanderbilt Theater, the United States Steel Corporation brings you The First Year by Frank Craven. And here is Roger Pryor speaking for the Theater Guild.
Good evening, everyone. Our play tonight, The First Year, is a heartwarming comedy by Frank Craven, originally produced by John Golden. It illuminates the problems that beset a young married couple, problems that occur today as surely as they did in 1920. Appearing tonight as Grace is Gene Tierney, lovely star of motion pictures. Featured as Tommy Tucker is David Wayne, who's scoring a personal success in the current Broadway hit Finian's Rainbow. Also featured are Betty Gard as Mrs. Barstow, Howard Smith as Mr. Livingston, and Parker Fennelly as Dr. Anderson. And now, The First Year. Now for a bit of nostalgia. It's spring in the year 1920. Woodrow Wilson is still in the White House. Prohibition is the law of the land. And had there been a hit parade, the number one song would have been Avalon. Avalon, remember it? We take you now to the home of the Livingston family in Mason Falls, Missouri. Seated in the parlor are Mrs. Livingston and her daughter Grace. Mrs. Livingston's brother, Myron, the town doctor who lives with them, looks up from his newspaper and says,
"Well, listen to this. Friends of Richard Loring will be pleased to hear of his association with the Central Pacific Railroad as a construction engineer. While all his friends in Mason Falls will regret his departure, they will be anxious to see him succeed in his chosen profession. Good luck, Dick." Grace, did you know about this?
Yes, Uncle Myron.
I can't say I'm sorry he's leaving town. I never cared much for that boy. Grace, I'm just as pleased you'll never see him again.
Oh, but I will. He's coming here tonight, Mother.
He is? What for? Grace, he's not going to... You're not thinking of getting married.
Why not? I'm 20, Mother. Another couple of years and I'll be an old maid.
Evening, everybody. Who's going to be an old maid?
Mother thinks I am, Dad. But I won't, I tell you. I'll get me a husband.
Grace!
Yes, and I'll have my own home, too. And it won't be in Mason Falls, either. I'm going to live in a great big city, like Joplin.
You mean you'd want to go away, where you wouldn't be near me?
Oh, I want to travel. Morocco, mysterious India, Havana. Did you know that Cuba was called the Pearl of the Antilles? Yeah,
whatever it's called, you won't be seeing much of it. Not with 8 or 10 children. Myron, you know as well as I do that Grace isn't old enough to make up her mind what she wants, or who.
Well, that's true enough.
Well, how old do you have to be, Uncle Myron? 100?
Ask your mother. Ask her when she finally made up her mind about your father, that he was the right man for her.
I always thought so.
No, you didn't. I remember 3 times during that first year when you were positive you'd made a big mistake. And once you were on the point of leaving him. Right, Fred?
Well, why bring that up?
I can't believe it. Not you two. Not you, Dad, and you, Mother.
What are you trying to prove by all this, Myron?
That you were right when you said Grace wasn't old enough to make up her mind about who to marry. Nobody ever is, until they've tried it.
Myron, is there one thing in the world you haven't used as a subject for an evening lecture here?
No, I think I've exhausted about everything.
Well, you've exhausted me. Now, let's all go inside and have some supper. Maybe with your mouth full, you won't talk so much.
Uncle Myron, have you a patient in there?
No, no. Come on in. Well, what can I do for you, Grace?
Uncle Myron, did you really mean what you said before supper? That a girl can't know if she's picked the right man until after she's married him?
Uh-huh. It usually takes about a year to find out. The first year.
Oh, dear.
Who is it, Grace?
Who's who?
The boy you have in mind.
It's Dick Loring.
Oh.
And Tommy Tucker.
Two of them? Hey, golly, you're not as slow as your mother thinks. Have they both asked you?
Well, Dick has, heaps of times. Tommy hasn't. I don't believe Tommy would ever ask me first. He's the kind who would go to Mother and Dad and ask them if he could ask me.
You know, I rather favor that method.
Well, I don't. Dick's awfully good looking, you know. He's more romantic than any boy in town. Did you see his new Stutz Bearcat?
I heard it.
Tommy's nice, though. Of course, he isn't good looking, and he's always falling over things, and he doesn't own a raccoon coat like Dick, but... Oh, there's Dick now.
Why does he have to drive with that cutout wide open?
He's going to ask me for the last time. I know it. Oh, if I could only see Tommy and he together. Oh, Uncle Myron, what shall I do?
Well, you might answer the doorbell, and I wouldn't worry too much about it. I believe in fate when it comes to these things. Now, you run along. I've got work to do. Yes, sir, fate. That's the thing. 569, ring 2, please. Hello. Hello, is that you, Tommy? This is Dr. Anderson, otherwise known as Fate. Look, you'd better get over here right away. Well, you don't want to see Grace marry Dick Loring, do you? Hello, Tommy, are you there? Well, what happened to you? Oh, you fell off the chair. No, she hasn't made up her mind yet. But you'll have to ask her tonight. You're not nervous, are you? Oh, you are. Well, you'd better come over right away, anyhow. Goodbye.
Well, Dick, we all saw your name in the paper tonight, so you're leaving town, eh?
Yes, sir. There isn't much in this town for a fellow with ambition. I got ambition, you know.
You don't say.
What about Tommy Tucker? He's doing all right.
Oh, Tommy's in the same class with everybody else in this town, Doctor. Real estate. He's wasting his time here. I've told him so.
Uh-huh. He seems satisfied.
That's just it. They're all satisfied. That's because they haven't got ambition. I got ambition.
So you said before.
Construction engineering must be awfully romantic, Dick.
It sure is, Grace. A battle all the time. Against nature and the elements. Big stuff. I can just see me now damming a river, throwing a bridge across a chasm.
How thrilling.
Fiddlestick.
Oh, to camp out under the trees, to look up at the stars, out where the blue begins.
Who's that?
I don't know. Come in. Oh, good evening, Tommy.
Oh, good evening, all. I just happened to be passing the house, and it occurred to me to drop in.
What's that you've got in your hand, Tommy?
Oh, it's a box of candy. I just happened to be passing the drugstore, and it's for you, Grace.
Thank you, Tommy. Dick, don't you find it awfully close in here?
Just what I was thinking, Angel. I know. Let's sit out on the porch a while. I brought my ukulele.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Will you please excuse us?
Oh, but I thought... Say, it's dark out there.
What?
Well, I mean, how about some bridge?
Say, that's a swell idea, Tommy. Pull up a chair.
Sure, you go right ahead, Tommy. Have a good game.
Oh, but Grace, I thought you... wouldn't you like to...
I don't believe I'm in the mood for bridge, Tommy.
Well, how about checkers?
I don't think so. Come along, Dick.
Maybe you better switch on the porch light, Grace.
Well, that's a very good idea, Mrs. Livingston. She might trip over the step and... where's the switch?
Don't bother. It only attracts the bugs. Have a nice game of checkers, Tommy.
Gosh, Doctor, I didn't realize you were giving me the high sign to come into your office.
I've been giving it to you for the last hour. What are you looking out that window at?
The porch. What are they doing out there? Hey, Doctor, do you think he's proposing to her now?
Not with that ukulele going. When that stops, then it's time to worry.
Do you think she'll accept him?
I don't know. Of course, she likes Dick. You see, Tommy, he's the style that appeals to girls, not fellows like us.
Us?
Yes, us. We're alike, you and I. We're quiet, matter-of-fact sort of men. No romance about us, is there?
You know, Doctor, I think you're all wrong about me.
Yeah?
I'm very romantic.
You are?
Yes, sir, more than you'd suspect.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
But I guess I'm too late, as usual.
Oh, nonsense. You haven't been turned down yet.
Hey.
What's the matter?
Doctor, do you hear what I hear?
What's that?
No ukulele.
Steady, my boy, steady.
Oh, thank goodness. Doctor, I'm going to follow your advice. I will ask her. I'll speak to Mr. and Mrs. Livingston tonight.
Good grief, no. Speak to Grace.
Oh, but I'm scared. Besides, how'll I get the chance?
Make one. If you're romantic, be romantic. Put your whole heart into it. Walk right up and grab her.
Doctor, when you say grab her, do you mean grab her?
Yes, of course I do. The minute Dick leaves, you go out there on the porch and grab her and hang on. Don't forget now.
Grab her!
Well, good night, Grace. Good night, Tommy.
Good night, Dick.
Oh, Tommy, before I go, could I have a word with you inside?
Certainly. Excuse me, Grace. Well, what is it?
You know, Tommy, I've been thinking. You and I have been friends ever since we were kids. Why, we even played tricks on the teacher together. Mrs. Broom. Old Broomstick, remember?
You played the tricks. I was kept in after school on account of them.
Yeah. It always ended up that way. Funny, wasn't it?
Well, not to me. Say, what's on your mind? I want to get back on the porch and talk to Grace.
Well, look, Tommy, you want to marry Grace, don't you?
What business is that of yours?
Can't you see, Tommy? I want to help you, to give you some advice.
Well, why should you when you're interested in her yourself?
That's exactly where you're wrong. I'm no competition. I came here tonight to say goodbye to Grace.
Well, but I thought that you...
Now, look, Tommy, old man. I've chosen my career. It's a long road and a hard one. That's no life for a woman living with a construction gang. Women want the finer things of life, and they're entitled to them.
Gosh, Dick, I guess I misunderstood you. What's the advice?
Tommy, you don't know much about girls, do you?
No, I don't.
Well, the first thing you've got to learn is that they're human, too. Get what I mean?
No. How do you mean, human?
Well, human. What I mean is, well, take a fella, for instance.
Uh-huh.
He likes to have a good time now and then, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, so do girls.
By a good time, do you mean go to the movies?
Well, that's one way, but let's look at it from another angle.
Okay.
A girl doesn't like a fellow to be too, well, too gentle with her. She doesn't want to be worshipped. She wants to be loved.
Well, that's all right, then. I love Grace, so everything's fine. I'm going to tell her tonight.
Oh, that's great. But how are you going to tell her?
How? Do you mean, what words will I use?
Tommy, there are certain times that are not times for words.
Oh, sure, I know what you mean. Grab her.
Now we're getting someplace. Now, from my experience with Grace...
What experience?
I mean, from my observation of Grace. I would say your best approach is the big masculine he-man stuff. She'll resist, of course, but she won't mean it. That's another thing you've got to learn. They never mean it. Well, goodbye, Tommy, and good luck. And remember, grab her.
Tommy?
Yes, Grace.
Oh, why, Tommy, you look so funny. Is anything the matter?
Nope. Mind if I sit down?
Of course not, silly.
Move over.
Why, Tommy, can't you even say please?
I said move over.
Well.
There, that's better. Grace, darling, I love you.
Tommy, stop!
I've always loved you ever since the time we fell into the pond together with our Sunday clothes on. Kiss me.
I will not. Let go of
me. I know
me.
You don't mean it. I know you're only human and you like to...
I do, do I?
Oh.
What's going on here tonight, anyhow? First Dick and then you.
What about Dick?
Well, after we were out on the porch a little while, he grabbed me. He wouldn't let go, and I had to bite him in the hand.
But I don't understand. I thought he was...
Then he asked me to marry me and showed me the license he'd already got.
Why, that dirty skunk, why...
Well, I told him I could never marry a man who grabbed. And anyhow, I was in love with someone else. And then he asked why I came out on the porch with him, and I said it was only to tease you.
Me?
And that maybe it would make you mad and you'd propose tonight. I thought, oh, Tommy, you do love me, don't you?
Oh, do I? I should say I do.
Tommy, if I were to say I'd marry you...
Grace, you mean I won't even have to ask you? Oh, gosh, it's wonderful.
If I said, would you go away with me? Would we live someplace else? I couldn't marry anyone who lived in Mason Falls.
Oh, sure, I'd do anything. Go any place.
Do you want to have children, Tommy?
Oh, of course I do. Lots and lots of them. I mean...
That's fine. So do I.
It's all settled now? Are we engaged?
There's just one more thing. Tommy, do you think my father and mother are happily married?
Why, sure, Grace. Why?
Well, I just learned tonight that they almost got divorced the first year. That Mother was on the point of leaving Dad.
Oh, I don't believe it.
Everybody says the first year of married life is worst. Oh, Tommy, we've got to promise no matter what happens, we'll never leave each other.
Sure.
Tommy Tucker, do you solemnly swear no matter what happens, you'll never leave me or separate from me or divorce me till death do us part?
I do.
And I, Grace Livingston, do likewise. Amen.
Well, is that all? Are we engaged now?
Well, you haven't kissed me yet.
Oh, that.
Oh, Tommy.
Oh, we are now, Gracie. We're engaged. Mr. Livingston, Mrs. Livingston, hey, everybody, we're engaged.
It's 1921, a year later. Mr. and Mrs. Tommy Tucker have moved to the great big city of Joplin, Missouri. As yet, the great marital crisis that all young couples go through has not reared its ugly head, but as Uncle Myron would say, give it time. Give it time.
Grace, I'm home. Hey, well, you're not dressed, and it's after 7. They'll be here any minute.
I can't help it. Magnolia never showed up, and I had everything to do myself. I hope Mr. and Ms. Barstow will eat my cooking.
What's the matter with Magnolia?
She has misery. Camellia's here. She's going to wait on table.
Well, here, I'll help you. Who's Camellia?
Magnolia's daughter. They're all named after flowers. Please, Tommy, don't help me. You're getting it all wrong. Forks do not belong with spoons.
What's the matter with you tonight? Aren't you feeling well?
How would you feel if you were left without help and having people to dinner you'd never seen before?
Oh, I'm sorry about that, but I wanted Mr. Barstow to come here. It's a business reason, a very important one.
All right, go on up and get dressed.
What do you mean, get dressed? You don't mean my full dress clothes?
Certainly I do.
Oh, I don't have to do that, Grace. Nobody dresses for dinner in Joplin.
Well, you ought to be glad to have something to wear. It's more than I have.
I got that salad all done like you told me, Miss Tucker.
All right, Camellia. Now you can take the melons out of the icebox and fix them. Cut them across.
Yes'm. Which way is across?
What?
Is across this way or across that way?
Just cut them in half, like this.
Yes'm. I already done that.
Well, that's fine. Did you see them?
Yes'm, I seed them. How else could I...
Oh, no. I mean, did you take the seeds out?
Oh, does it do that? There's one of them that's no good.
No good? And I only got 2. Well, give the best half of the one that's no good to Mr. Tucker, and I won't have any. By the way, Camellia, do you know which side to serve from?
What difference do it make as long as they get it?
Now look, Camellia. You serve from the left and you take from the right. Do you understand?
Yes'm. Serve from the left and take from the right.
Now, don't forget. Come along, Tommy. We'd better go up and get dressed.
Help me with this tie, will you, Grace? And don't look so worried.
Tommy, when will things loosen up a little? I mean, I simply can't go on mending my old dresses.
I know, dear, but it's going to be a lot different from now on.
Tommy, has something happened?
Grace, we're going to be rich.
Tommy, who died?
Nobody. Grace, do you remember my telling you about a piece of property they call the amusement park?
Well, what about it?
Well, for the last 6 months, I've been buying options on all those lots around there. I did that because I heard on good authority that the J&M was going to build
a... What's the J&M?
It's a railroad, the Joplin and Missouri. They're going to build a spur line, and the route is going to run right over this property. Now, I don't want to get you nervous or anything, Grace, but the man who's coming here tonight is the purchasing agent for the road.
You mean Mr. Barstow?
Uh-huh. I gave him a 2-day option. It's up tonight.
That's nice. How much are you going to ask him, Tommy?
$100,000.
Oh, no! $100,000? Oh, Tommy, if you got it, it means travel, Europe, Africa, the Nile, the pyramids, the beautiful blue Danube.
You bet.
Oh, Tommy, do you realize that tonight is the most important night of our lives? That our whole future is being decided tonight?
Yep.
Oh, dear. What's Mrs. Barstow like?
Well, I hear she's an ex-actress or something, kind of a breezy with a great sense of humor.
Oh, dear.
Now, don't get nervous. Now, everything's going to be all... What's that?
Oh, Camellia, I'll run down and see.
No, I'll go down, and you better hurry up and get dressed. Camellia, what on earth... Hey, where are you going?
Home.
Oh, no, you're not...
I couldn't help it, Mr. Tucker. It just slipped out of my hand.
Well, what slipped out?
That big blue platter that Miss Tucker said I was to be careful of on account it was an antique.
Oh, that's all right, Camellia, but you will be careful. I mean, when you're serving, won't you?
No, sir. I ain't going to be careful no more, because every time I'm careful, I drop something.
Well, that's all right, Camellia, and now everything's settled. I mean, you'll stay, won't you?
All right. But remember what I told Miss Tucker. I can wait on table, but I learned as best.
Oh, fine. Grace, where's that bottle of gin Nate Allen gave us for our wedding present? I want to make some cocktails.
Magnolia drank it.
No, she didn't, Miss Tucker. My mother never touches a draft. She hates it.
Well, she certainly touched this when I gave it to her drink by drink to make her forget the misery.
Oh, that's different.
Well, what am I going to give Mr. and Mrs. Barstow?
Root beer.
Oh, that's fine. Yes, that'll certainly put him in a good humor.
Mr. Tucker, did y'all want some gin? I got a bottle here.
Why, Camellia, where'd you get that?
I stopped in and got it at the bootlegger's. It's for my mother.
Is it, all right?
Sure, it's all right. Made in a clean bathtub.
Thanks, Camellia. I want to pay you for this, of course.
Well, you're always so nice to me about breaking that dish. I'd like to help you out.
Well, that's awfully nice of you, Camellia, but I insist. Now, how much is it?
65 cents.
This whole big bottle?
Well, they're two for a dollar, but I only needed one.
Oh. Well, listen, do you know how to make a cocktail, Camellia?
Yes, sir. I've seen them make them places I've worked. They just squeeze half an orange in a good-sized shot of gin and calls it an orange blossom.
They do?
Yes, sir. Gotta be careful with them, though. They can knock you cold.
Well, Camellia, as neither Mrs. Tucker and I drink, you can make two of them a little weaker. Better put mostly orange juice in them.
Yes, sir. Who's that?
Well, that's the company we're expecting for dinner.
Oh, holy smoke.
Now, don't get frightened, Camellia.
I ain't frightened. I'm just scared.
Now, just answer the door, usher them in, tell them to have a seat, and that Mr. and Mrs. Tucker will be right down.
Well, it certainly is a cozy little place you have here.
Don't you think so, my dear?
Charming. Kind of reminds me of a play I was once in, The Lower Depths.
Now, just sit right down. You over there, Mrs. Barstow, and Mr. Barstow over here. Uh-huh. That's right. Dinner is all ready.
Now, just a moment, dear. Perhaps Mr. and Mrs. Barstow would care for a cocktail.
Oh, would I care for it? Outside of a string of pearls, there's nothing I'd rather have.
Camellia.
Here he is, Mr. Tucker. Two regulars and two deadheads.
Give the regulars to Mr. and Mrs. Barstow. You see, Mrs. Barstow, as neither my wife nor I drink, I had ours made a little weaker.
Oh, you don't know what you're missing. Well, here's death and destruction. Jerusalem, I'm poisoned.
Is it strong?
Strong? Boy, where did you get that vitriol? And say, me, look at old Barstow over there. Hey, don't swallow the glass.
That's the best drink I've had since I left Texas.
Well, I hope the dinner will be better. Would you like to remove your hat, Mrs. Barstow?
No, thanks. I look funnier with it on.
Tommy, dear, reach for the buzzer with your foot, will you?
All right, I think it's right over here.
Oh! Well.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Mrs. Barstow.
I found it, Tommy. It's over here.
Nice hot soup. Here you are, Miss Barstow.
Oh, yeah.
Serve from the left and take from the right. Now you, Miss Tucker. Serve from the left and take from the right. Ladies first.
Camellia, haven't you forgotten something?
You mean my slip? I thought it wouldn't show if I didn't stand in front of the light.
I mean, the melon. You forgot.
I knew there was something. Excuse me, Miss Barstow. Take from the left and serve to the right. Excuse me, Miss Tucker. Take from the right and serve from the... Don't you folks go nowhere, as I'll be right back.
Please excuse Camellia. She isn't our regular name.
Why, she's cute. Don't you think so, Pete?
Oh, very cute. You can put that cocktail glass down now. There's no more in it.
We'll have some more later.
Here's the melon, folks. Serve from the left and take from the right.
Camellia, do you have to say that out loud?
No, Moni, I like the rhythm of it. Serve from the left and take from the right. Yeah, serve from the left and
that
take
will
from...
do, Camellia.
Yes, sir. You let me know when you're ready for the soup now.
Say, this melon is delicious.
Now, take it easy, Pete. You'll choke yourself.
You know, I believe I could be persuaded to have another slice.
Oh, where is your home, Mrs. Barstow? In Joplin?
Well, we park our furniture in Toledo, but Pete's a traveling man. I guess that makes me the farmer's daughter.
Travel. That's what I've always wanted to do.
Yes, yes, it's the truth. I told Grace she should have married a conductor.
What exactly do you do, Mr. Vosto, for the railroad, I mean?
Oh, I buy all the equipment and property and things like that.
Well, you must have Tommy take you out sometime and show you the land he owns.
Mr. Tucker, I've been over every foot of your husband's property.
You don't say.
I'm past thinking about it. Mr. Tucker, I am going to take up that option.
Oh, Tommy, you did it. How soon can we leave for Europe?
Now, who do you suppose... better see who that is, Grace.
Hiya, folks. How's every little thing?
Dick Loring.
Now, don't get up. Don't get up.
What on earth are you doing?
Just got off the train. Give me a kiss, Gracie, for just for old Lang Syne, huh?
Why, Dick. Mrs. Barstow and Mr. Barstow, this is Mr. Loring.
How do you do?
Hiya, folks. Now, don't let me interrupt anything. Gosh, Tommy, you look funny in that tux.
So you just arrived. You didn't waste much time getting up here, did you?
Dick's an old friend of ours, Mrs. Barstow. Almost one of the family.
Not on your husband's side, I bet.
Tommy, stop sharpening that knife. What have you been doing, Dick?
Oh, building railroads. Oregon, Mexico, British Columbia.
All those places. What thrilling experiences you must have had.
You don't hold on to your jobs very long, do you?
Mr. Barstow is with a railroad, too, Dick. The Joplin in Missouri.
Well, what do you know? I say, that's my road now. I'm the new construction boss, Mr. Barstow.
Oh, of course. I've heard some very fine things about you, Mr. Loring.
Oh, thank you. How have you been doing, Tommy, or shouldn't I ask?
Oh, Tommy's doing wonderfully, Dick. He's going to be a very rich man.
Is that so? You're sure you mean this, Tommy?
It's still a secret, Dick, but Tommy's
so... Never mind, Grace. Now, just eat your dinner.
Dick, Tommy has a big piece of property the railroad is going to buy for the new spur. It was an old amusement park.
Amusement park? Up by Hillsboro?
No, not Hillsboro, you idiot. Knollwood.
Well, I hope that's not what you're counting on to make you rich.
What do you mean, Dick?
Because Knollwood's not where the road's to be built at all.
Huh? What's that?
Tommy, did you hear what Dick said?
Certainly I heard what he said. What does he know about it?
I ought to know something. I'm going to build it.
Are you sure what you're saying, Loring?
Absolutely.
What if that route's been changed? They have not advised me.
What I advise you, Mr. Barstow, is not to listen to this demented half-wit.
Who's a half-wit, you dope?
Don't mind them, Mrs. Barstow. At home, they were always like this.
What delightful evenings you must have had.
Well, this kind of upsets the apple cart, Loring. Tucker here and I have practically concluded negotiations for his property.
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to queer your sale, Tommy.
Not much you didn't, but don't worry about me. I know what I'm doing. Mr. Barstow, I just want to remind you that your option expires tonight.
Well, I must admit this throws a different light
on
me.
No, it doesn't.
Now, don't be silly, Tommy. Your property isn't worth a plug nickel as far as the railroad's concerned.
Say, what is this, Mr. Barstow? A frame-up?
What do you mean, sir?
Now, take it easy, Pete. Remember your blood pressure.
Tommy, I'm surprised. Statue.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Barstow. I shouldn't have said that to a guest. But you, Loring, are not a guest. And you know why? Because a guest is somebody who's been invited.
Tommy Tucker!
Mrs. Tucker, I think under the circumstances, the best thing for Mrs. Barstow and me to do is retire. Mr. Tucker, I guess we'd better call the whole matter off.
Well, that's okay with me, Mr. Barstow. I just take back that option, if you don't mind.
Here you are, Mr. Tucker. You're welcome to it.
Now, tomorrow the price goes up, you know.
I risk it. Come along, my dear.
Good night, Mrs. Tucker.
Good night, Mrs. Barstow.
I hope everything will come out all right, but I doubt it.
Wait, I'll go along with you folks if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And do me a favor, Dick. Stay away from my house for good. And if I ever catch you looking at my wife, I'll break every bone in your body. Now get out of here.
You are listening to The First Year, produced by the Theater Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is George Hicks.
Good evening. For many years, the cattle, horses, sheep, and hogs of this country had a fine time breaking through rail fences and old-fashioned wire fences or tearing their hides trying to get over fences made of stone. In fact, our domestic animals were continually getting out of where they belonged and into where they didn't. It was bad for them and worse for their owners. Then a bright gentleman in Illinois thought up barbed wire. For For livestock, much of their roving fun was soon over. For farmers and ranchers, it was the dawn of a new era. An era that got even brighter when woven steel wire fencing was introduced. Today, thanks to the kind of painstaking research and development work which goes on constantly at United States Steel and throughout the steel industry, both barbed and woven wire fencing have been made more and more durable and efficient. In America's rise to agricultural leadership, steel fencing has played a major role. Throughout the nation, more and better livestock, more and better crops, lower-priced beef, pork, and mutton have resulted from its use. Without it, we could never have done so well in feeding the largest army and navy in our history, nor had food left over for our allies in the starving and war-torn countries. In the 1 year of 1946, the production of barbed and woven wire fencing amounted to 595,000 tons, or enough three-strand fence to go around the earth at the equator 24 times. And at today's prices of only a few cents a pound, it's safe to say that agricultural America has probably never had any other item that represented more value, more utility for such a low price. Producing high-grade barbed wire and woven wire fencing in tremendous quantities and improving these products through constant research and development is one of the important ways in which the industrial family of United States Steel is able to serve the nation. And it's one of the good reasons why more and more people look for the USS label whenever they buy anything made of steel. They know the USS label means quality steel.
We pause now for station identification.
Your station is KECA, Los Angeles.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of the first year, starring Jean Tierney as Grace Livingston and featuring David Wayne as Tommy Tucker. Betty Gard plays Mrs. Barstow, Howard Smith, Mr. Livingston, and Parker Fennelly, Dr. Anderson. Well, it's a few minutes later, and all is quiet at the Tucker homestead. Mr. and Mrs. Barstow and Dick Loring have gone, and so has the dream of sudden wealth. Yes, all is quiet except for the sound of Mrs. Tucker weeping softly.
Oh, will you please stop crying? Will you stop it? Grace, I'm asking you for the last time. What are you crying about?
You know.
I don't know.
I was just thinking of the rest of my life. I'll have to make my own dresses and put up a brave front to our friends and say, oh, yes, we're doing very nicely. Just as I had to say it tonight to Dick.
Well, how do you know he was telling you the truth about where the railroad's going?
A successful man like him doesn't have to lie.
Is that so? Well, I'm just a little tired of hearing how successful Mr. Loring is, and for two pins, I'd go over to his hotel and punch him right in the nose.
Well, you won't. You've behaved badly enough for one night.
I don't think you've behaved so well for a respectable married woman.
What did I do?
What did you do? For a minute, I thought you were going to kiss him when he asked you to.
Oh, I don't see what harm there would have been if I had.
Well, I'll tell you what harm there'd have... I'll tell you. I'd have busted that cocktail shaker over his head. That's what. Say, that reminds me. I think I'll have another drink.
No, you won't.
I will, too. Well, here's to the joys of married life. Bottoms up. You'd think that if he was such a great friend of ours, he'd have kept his mouth shut when he knew I had a business deal on. But no, he wouldn't do that. He has to tell all he thinks he knows. I wish I'd socked him.
Well, you'd better not. You'd get the worst of it.
You don't think I'm any good at all, do you, Grace? Do you, Grace?
You're tired, Tommy. What you need is sleep. You'd better come to bed.
I'm all right, and I'm not going to bed. I'm going out.
Out where?
What difference does it make to you? Maybe it'd be better if I went out and never came back. At least you'd have my insurance.
Tommy, don't talk like that. I won't have it.
Well, that's better than living with a man who can't support you. That's one way a fellow can make money for his wife, even a dope.
Stop it, I say.
Maybe you'd rather have me wait until I take out another policy.
Stop it.
Enough to take you to London or Paris. You're always so crazy about traveling.
I'm going upstairs, and I don't want you to come up.
Go ahead, and I wouldn't think of coming up.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to know the truth at last.
That's telling her. Guess I'll have another drink. Now,
What else was I going to tell her? Oh, yes. Someday you'll be surprised at the money I'll have. I'll show you I can be just as successful as Loudmouth Loring. I tell you, I know darn well that railroad is coming my way. Grace, where are you going with that suitcase?
I am going home.
That's ridiculous. You put that bag down. You're not going to leave this house.
Who's going to stop me?
I am.
Get out of my way, please.
I said you're not going to...
Tommy, stop it.
I...
Let go of my arm. You're hurting me.
I don't mean to hurt you, Grace, but you shouldn't have tried to get out of that door when I told you not to.
You're not giving me any orders.
Oh, it's that fellow Loring that's got you upset.
Dick Loring has nothing to do with it at all. And don't you even dare suggest it. Tommy, I've tried to be everything a wife should be to you, but you're just impossible. Impossible, do you hear? And I'm going home to my mother.
The trouble with you is you're train crazy. There isn't one good reason in the world for your acting like this except that you want to get on a train and go someplace.
That's just about as sensible as most things you say.
It's the truth. You wouldn't marry me unless we left Mason Falls. And the minute I tell you I'm going to make a bit of money, you want to go traveling someplace. And now that we're having a fight, the first thing that jumps into your head is hopping on a train. You can't stay still for 5 minutes.
I can't stay still. I've stayed in this stuffy little house with no one to talk to and nothing to do but cook and sew for you for 11 months. Now get out of my way.
You understand this, Grace? If you go out that door, you and I are through.
Of course we are.
I mean it.
I hope you do. So do I. Goodbye.
Holy smoke, she did it. Oh, what I need is a drink. A great, big, long drink.
Mr. Tucker. Oh, there you are on the Davenport. Wake up.
Was that? Oh, it's Mr. Barstow.
I knocked, but nobody answered, so I... Mr. Tucker, when I left here tonight, I got in touch with Sam Frisby. He's the president of the road.
What did he say?
He said your friend Loring is cockeyed. He said when he's building a railroad, he's not in the habit of confiding in every underling.
Did he call Dick an underling?
That's the mildest thing he called him.
Underling. I got to remember that.
So naturally, I come right back here and... Well, that arrangement of ours still stands, but the option, I mean.
Is that so? Who told you?
you got a great sense of humor, Mr. Tucker. Here's your certified check for $25,000. You'll get the other $75,000 when the deeds are made over.
That's only $100,000.
That was your price, wasn't it?
Right. It was my price. And when you left so suddenly, the price jumped $50,000 more.
That's unethical. I just went out to telephone to find if you weren't right about where the road was going.
No, not if I weren't. If Loring was. And if he had been, you'd have said the deal's all off. Now I say it's off.
But I don't understand.
I'll try to tell you. This means something to me. It's my vindication. I was sitting in this room with four other people, and of that four, not one, not even my own wife, had any faith in me. All you thought of, I was talking through my hat. You thought I was a dope. Well, you were wrong, and that mistake, Mr. Barstow, is going to cost you $50,000.
I won't pay it.
That's okay.
Well, you're a tough customer to do business with, Mr. Tucker, but... We've got to have that property.
You're telling me.
Make it 125.
150. Take it or leave it.
Well, here's your check. Yes, sir, you're a top customer.
I'm a smart businessman. The trouble with me is I don't drink enough. You think I'm smart?
I do, indeed.
You bet your life I am. I'm going to be rich. I'm going to have lots of fine clothes, all made to order. And my pants are going to be pressed, and I'm going to get me a great big house. Yes, sir, that's it. With lots of servants. And you know what I'm going to have around it? A railroad track. Yes, sir, a railroad track. With an engine and a Pullman car so my wife can go out and travel anytime she wants to. Any hour of the day or night.
Well, that is a splendid idea. Well, good night, Mr. Tucker. I'll see you in the morning.
Not too early, if you please. Camelia, come in here.
Yes, sir. What is it, Mr. Tucker?
Have a look at this check, Camelia. Read it.
Holy mackerel. 25,000 fish.
Right. And do you know what I'd do with it? I'd give it all to Mrs. Tucker, only she isn't here.
Where is she?
She's left me, Camelia. She walked out on me.
She did? Holy mackerel.
You know, Camelia, when we were married, everybody said the first year of married life was a... toughest time two people could go through. And I didn't think they knew what they were talking about.
But they were right, Camellia. It is. It is. Are you married, Camellia?
Not yet.
Are you gonna be?
I got an offer.
Well, then, you take a tip from an old married man, Camellia. Don't you get married until the second year.
You are listening to the first year produced by the Theater Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here again, speaking for United States Steel, is George Hicks.
41 years ago this month, a little group of men stood on the shore of Lake Michigan and looked about them at the desolate, windswept sand dunes which stretched as far as they could see. They were only 30 miles southeast of Chicago, but they might as well have been in the middle of a desert, for there was nothing, no people, no houses, no farms, nothing but rolling sand dunes and the wintry waters of the lake. Then they started work, for they were an engineering crew sent to begin the building of a great new industrial plant. That was the beginning of the Gary Works of the Carnegie, Illinois Steel Corporation, one of the members of the United States Steel family, and it was also the birth of the city of Gary, Indiana. That same year, the town of Gary held its first election. 3 years later, the plant produced its first steel, and in a few months, the town was incorporated as a city. Since then, Gary has grown steadily and rapidly. Today, other members of the United States Steel family have important branches in this area: National Tube Company, American Bridge Company, Universal Atlas Cement Company, and another Carnegie, Illinois plant, the Gary Sheet and Tin Mill. The Gary operations have become one of the greatest in the world. Other industries have come to Gary, too, and prospered there. The population has gone from nothing to 130,000 people. Gary has become one of the most important industrial centers in America. It's a city of homes, too, a city of parks and beaches and gardens, with a school system that's world famous for its progressiveness and accomplishments. Gary originated the work-study-play system of education, which has been used as an international pattern for public schools. Men and women from all over the world have come to Gary to work and make their homes. From 52 nations and every part of America, they've come to this new city. And because of the spirit of the community, the progressiveness of its civic groups, and the social planning of such organizations as the National Urban League and the Community Chest, Gary is an outstanding example of how Americans of varying creeds, nationalities, and races can live and work together happily. Living up to its responsibilities as an important part of this and many other such communities is one of the many ways in which the industrial family of United States Steel serves the nation.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
Now the curtain rises on the third act of the first year, starring Gene Tierney and featuring David Wayne, Betty Gard, Howard Smith, and Parker Fennelly. A few days later at the house at Mason Falls, where Grace has gone after her memorable battle with Tommy. We see her now in the living room, her forehead wrinkled in thought as she composes what seems to be a very difficult letter.
If you're writing a letter to Tommy, that means you don't expect him today.
I'm not sure, Mother.
But you said you were sure he'd be here before this.
I thought so. I expected him to follow me.
That was 5 days ago. If I were you, I'd be worried to death. He's not in any kind of trouble, is he?
I don't know, Mother. You can ask him when he gets here. Oh, why does Uncle Myron have to be away just this week?
Because he went to a medical convention, that's why. And as for asking Tommy, I fully intend to. I can't seem to get anything out of you.
All right, Mother. What is it you want to know?
I'd like to know why you arrived here at 3 o'clock in the morning, and why you're so close-mouthed about everything, and why you haven't left the house since you got here.
Haven't I told you and told you and told you? I wanted to surprise you. I've stayed in this house because I'm not feeling well, and If I'm not welcome here, I can leave.
Grace!
Oh, don't bother me. I'm going upstairs where I can be alone. There's nobody to pester me by asking a million questions.
My goodness, 1 year of married life has certainly changed her, all right. Can't pry a word out of her.
Where's the Sunday paper, Mother? Here it is.
Now, Fred, you put that paper down and listen to me. Fred, I'm worried about Tommy and Grace. They've lost all their money, I'm sure of it.
Oh?
Tommy and Grace. And I'm certain of it because Grace hasn't one new thing to her back.
Well, why should she? When she got married, you had me buy her enough clothes to last a lifetime.
Fred, it's your duty to help them. Now, the first thing I want you to do is to talk to Grace.
Good grief. Can't you talk to her? You know her better than I do.
Everything I say seems to irritate her.
No wonder. Look what it does to me.
Fred.
All right. I'll talk to her.
Now, remember, dear, you must be very careful of her feelings. She's sensitive.
I know what to say.
Now, start off by telling her.
Are you going to do this or am I?
Oh, all right. I'll send her right down to you.
Well, Father, here I am.
Oh, what of it?
Well, I thought you wanted to see me.
No, I do. Now, Grace, I want to be diplomatic about this. I don't want to hurt your feelings or anything, but what the devil's the trouble between you two confounded idiots?
Trouble? What makes you think there's any trouble?
Now, stop stalling. I want you to send for Tommy.
I can't do that, Father. I can't ask if Tommy to come back.
Now, look here, Grace. I didn't see you married with any idea of your leaving your husband and coming back here for me to support.
Stop it, Father. I'll never ask you to support me. And I won't stay in this house another day. Do you understand? Not another day.
Here. What's all this about?
Oh, Uncle Myron.
Why, Gracie, what on earth is the matter?
Well, I didn't think I was going to upset her like that. I didn't mean it, Gracie. Tell her I didn't mean it, Myron. Go to heck with it. Where's that newspaper?
Boy, I've never heard you cry like this before, Gracie. Now, what is it? Tell me all about it.
Myron, thank goodness you're back. We were beginning to get worried when we read the convention was over on Thursday.
Oh, I just stopped off to pay a little visit.
Where?
Joplin.
Did you see Tommy?
Oh, yes. I expected to find you there, Grace.
Was he all right?
No, he wasn't. I found him in the hospital.
There,
Gracie, it's all right. Nothing to worry about at all. He isn't in any danger.
What was it, Myron?
Oh, I'll tell you what it was. It was attempted suicide. Because I ran out on him just when he needed me most, and I'll never forgive myself for it. Never. That's what it was, wasn't it, Uncle Myron?
Well, not exactly. Stomach poisoning. That man must have been drinking floor varnish.
Oh, I've got to go to him. I've got to. You know all about it, don't you, Uncle Myron? Why I left him, I mean.
Why did you, Grace? You didn't quarrel. Not with Tommy.
We didn't quarrel. We fought. And then we separated forever. I was a miserable idiot to do it because Tommy just had a great disappointment and lost everything. And I'd no right to leave him at a time like that. And I'm going right back and tell him so. Where's the timetable?
Well, what do you know?
What is it, Fred?
Now, listen to this on the front page of today's paper. Listen, everybody. Local boy makes a coup.
Makes a what?
Oh, well, then, coup or whatever you call it. It's French for a cleanup. It's about Tommy.
Tommy? My Tommy?
Your Tommy. Now, listen. The Joplin and Missouri Railroad has purchased amusement park and will at once start laying tracks for its new line. The largest price paid to any one holder was $150,000 to Thomas Tucker. Mr. Tucker is the son-in-law of our distinguished fellow citizen, Mr. Frederick Livingston. Well, what do you know?
Oh, isn't that wonderful? I always said that Tommy was a smart boy.
Yeah, so did I. 150,000 simoleons. Well, Gracie, you certainly picked a fine time for a fight with him. You'd better get on that train in a hurry.
I'm not going.
What?
Not going?
Why not?
Because I can't. I left him when I thought he failed, that he was down and out. Do you think I can go back now? No, I'll never go back. I'll never see him again. Not now. Oh, Tommy, why must you always be so contrary? Why do you have to go and be a success? Come in.
Hello, Grace.
Why, Dick. I didn't know you were in Mason Falls.
Yeah, I got in last night. I lost my job with the railroad.
Oh, that's too bad.
Oh, it wasn't my fault. They told me those tracks were going where I said they were. Did Tommy come here with you?
Dick, Tommy and I have separated.
Really?
Yeah. Dick, do you think when you called that night, my welcome to you was too cordial?
Too cordial? Why, it couldn't be, baby.
But you didn't misunderstand. You knew that I was just being friendly.
So that's it. Tommy was jealous.
He accused me of a lot of things. Of just everything, Dick. Why, I've never been spoken to in my life the way he talked to me.
Now, there, there, Grace. Don't you worry. Just put your head on my shoulder. That's a good girl. You know, it's too bad about this thing, because if ever a girl deserved a swell guy, it's you.
Mr. Loring, take your hand away from my wife.
Tommy!
Why, hello, Tommy, old man.
Don't you Tommy me, you underling. Mr. Loring, ever since we were kids together in grade school and then in high school, there's one thing I've been wanting to do more than anything else in the world. This is it.
Why, you...
Tommy, have you gone crazy? Dick's twice as big as you are.
Grace, will you kindly hold my coat and my...
Oh, look out, Tommy! Oh, Dick, get off him! Oh, you coward! How can you hit a man when he's down?
I'll hit him! I'll kill him! That's what I'll do!
Oh, help!
Tommy,
Mother and the
Myrons!
Quick! Stop it! You're killing each other!
It's all right, Grace. I've got him!
Get off of him, Dick! Oh, my poor Tommy! Get off of him, Dick, all right?
Grace, put down that face!
I'll put it down right on your head!
Oh!
What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. You missed me and hit Tommy.
Oh, where am I?
Now, you'll be all right, Tommy. Just relax.
Oh, doctor. Where's Loring?
He's gone.
He coming back?
No.
Thank goodness for that.
Now, you just sit still for a minute. Oh, come in, Grace. Got the cotton and antiseptic?
Here it is. Does it hurt, Tommy?
It does, but what is one more hurt than the kind of life I've been leading lately?
Where's the adhesive?
I'll get it.
Tommy, I don't think you ought to talk that way to Grace. She feels pretty bad about this.
I hope she does. That fellow Loring packs an awful wallop, doctor. Oh, my head.
Well, Loring didn't hit you there.
Well, it's got a big lump. I didn't just break out, did I?
No, you were hit with a vase. Grace threw it.
What? Oh, I knew I was wrong to come back here with you, doctor. But you said that 5 days was just about right. You said she'd fall on my neck.
Here, the adhesive.
Oh, thank you, Grace. Now, my dear, just hold Tommy's head this way so I can see what I'm doing.
I can hold my own head, thank you.
Yes, Uncle Myron. He can hold his own head. Not only that, but he can take it and bang it on the wall for all I care. I am now going upstairs.
Just one moment, please. There's something I'd like to say to you, if I may. It won't take up much of your time.
Well?
Contrary to the opinions of masterminds, I happen to be right about where a certain railroad was going. I have here a check which I think you're entitled to.
That's very generous of you, Tommy, but I don't want it. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Doctor, this check is for $25,000. Will you kindly give it to my wife's father? I trust that will be enough for her board and lodging here for the next 6 months.
But, Tommy, I don't believe...
Well, if it isn't, why, just get in touch with my secretary. There's plenty more where that comes from. I'm now leaving this house. Goodbye, Grace.
Goodbye.
Aren't you going to say goodbye to me, Tommy?
Goodbye, doctor.
Tommy, before you go, there's one question I'd like you to answer. Now think, what would you rather be than anything in the world?
Single.
No, you don't. You don't mean that. I know you love Grace and she loves you.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I never heard of anything so ridiculous in all my life.
I'd just like to know something. What was the fight you had back in Joplin all about?
I'll tell you what it was. He was brutal to me. Absolutely brutal.
Brutal? Me?
Yes, you were. I have marks on my arm yet where you grabbed me.
Why, Gracie, Tommy talked of you the whole time at the hospital. He didn't want to live unless you came back to him.
That's when I was delirious.
No, you weren't either. And, Tommy, when Gracie heard that you'd been sick, she nearly tore the timetable in half, looking up the first train that would take her home.
Oh, sure, sure. But it wasn't on account of me. It was the trip. I was just another excuse to get on a train and go someplace. Doctor, if ever I died, she'd bury me in California just for the trip.
What you're talking about.
Oh, shut up, both of you. Now, you two are just suffering from matrimonial measles. Troubles that look terrible but don't amount to anything. Everybody has them, and like measles, it's better to have them young and get them over with. Years from now, you're either going to laugh over this or cry over it. If you let it take you apart, separate you, why, you're going to cry. So let's laugh at it. What do you say, Gracie? How about you, Tommy? Well, of course, if you want your child to grow up without a father...
What? Whose child?
Don't look so scared. It's happened before.
Well, I know, but not to me. Is it true, Grace?
Of course it's true, you dope. You think I'd leave you if I weren't nervous and upset and high-strung?
Well, why didn't you tell me?
Well, I didn't want you to worry.
Oh, I see. You didn't want to worry me. So first you fight with me, then you leave me, then you run home to your mother, and then you just bust me over the head with a bottle.
It wasn't a bottle. It was a vase.
Well, it felt like a bottle.
Hey, stop it, stop it. That first year isn't over yet. Do you want your child to be born with a pair of boxing gloves on?
My child. Oh, I hope he takes after you, Grace.
You do? Why?
Because you're the most beautiful, the most wonderful girl in the whole world.
Am I, darling?
Of course you are.
Darling, I was just wondering.
Yes, dear?
Darling, how soon is it before a baby is old enough to travel?
Curtain has fallen on the Theater Guild on the Air production of The First Year by Frank Craven, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation, starring Jean Tierney as Grace Livingston, and featuring David Wayne as Tommy Tucker, Betty Gard as Mrs. Barstow, Howard Smith as Mr. Fred Livingston, and Parker Fenley as Dr. Myron Anderson. Other members of our cast included Dorothy Sands as Mrs. Helen Livingston, Leon Janney as Dick Loring, Viola Dean as Camellia, and Will Gear as Mr. Barstow. And here is Roger Pryor with a word about next week's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, the Theater Guild on the Air presents Faye Bainter and a distinguished cast in Ladies in Retirement. The play is a murder melodrama by Edward Percy and Reginald Denham. Featured with Miss Bainter will be Estelle Winwood and Mildred Dunnock. The following week, the Theater Guild on the Air will present Ingrid Bergman in Noel Coward's Still Life, which recently was made into the successful motion picture Brief Encounter.
Remember, next week, Ladies in Retirement, starring Faye Bainter. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Helburn, with Homer Fickett, director, Carol Irwin, production executive, and our Minor Marshall, executive director of the radio department. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy, and the play adapted for radio by Arthur Aaron. Miss Jean Tierney appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox and may soon be seen with Rex Harrison in The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Your announcer is Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at this same time.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.